Welcome to Abide in Liberty, a podcast empowering patriots everywhere to re-enthrone faith, family, and freedom as the bedrock pillars of liberty in education, our communities, and our nation.
Hello, and welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Abide in Liberty. Last week, I talked about some of the miracles of the Constitutional Convention in celebration of Constitution Day, which happened a few weeks ago. During this time, I've been reading a book called The Washington Hypothesis, and it's a great book. It goes through a lot of the stories of the American Revolution that I've studied and read about in many different books, both secular and spiritually bent books. But this one just goes through and tries to highlight some of the main events and some of the most miraculous events of the American Revolution, and specifically the role that George Washington had to play in those events. So I kind of, you know, launching off of last week's podcast, I want to spend the next number of weeks, I'm not exactly sure how long it's going to take me to get through all of them, but going through a series talking about the miracles of the American Revolution. And I'm going to be pulling these from The Washington Hypothesis. This is a book that was written by Timothy Ballard, the founder of Operation Underground Railroad. And for those who are aware of some of the controversies and scandals that he finds himself in the middle of right now, I'm not going to talk about those. I, quite frankly, have not devoted and don't plan to devote really much time at all to figuring out or coming up with my own opinion on who's right, who's wrong. Is it a conspiracy? Is it not? I do find the timing of the accusations very suspect. This is, you know, kind of a tactic of the left to go after their opposition with accusations, but it also sounds like that there are some real legitimate allegations here. Time will tell what's right, what's wrong. The fact that this book was written by Timothy Ballard many years ago, that doesn't undermine its value in any way. As I've been going through this, like I said, these are historically accurate stories, and he is sharing truth, and he's sharing accurate interpretations of the role of God in those. So whether, you know, these allegations that come out end up being true, kind of in a worst case scenario, to me, that's no reason to put the truths from this book aside. You know, we don't stop learning about the incredible faith of young David slaying Goliath just because King David later messed up and made some very serious mistakes. So for me, worst case scenario, this is very similar. I'm not going to avoid something good that he did earlier in his life because of mistakes made later. So that's all I'm going to say about it. I highly recommend the book. If you enjoy, you know, the next few weeks talking about these events, I highly recommend going and buying the book yourself and reading some of these things in greater detail. But first, before doing that, I want to start with some Book of Mormon prophecies about the founding of the American nation, of the United States of America. There was a guy named Nephi who lived about 600 to 550 years before Christ, who before he and his family had made their way over here to the American continent, saw in vision what was going to happen. He saw that his family would eventually be taken to a land of promise, which is the Americas, that his people would establish their civilization, but ultimately that civilization would degenerate into wickedness and chaos. And as you read through and you get to the end of the Book of Mormon, if you haven't read it yet, I highly recommend it, but this is a little bit of a spoiler alert. That's exactly what happens. About the year 400 AD, after a remarkable and miraculous visit from Christ to the American continent and to these Nephite descendants, this civilization did ultimately collapse and fail. They degenerated into just, you know, horrible cannibalistic practices, and they became a heathen nation as prophesied. And it was those later ancestors who were the American Indians in the North American and in the Central and South American continents that were discovered later by Europeans. So Nephi saw all of this happening in vision, and he was actually shown what would happen to his posterity when those Europeans came. as well as what those Europeans would establish here on this continent. So I want to read from this prophecy just a few verses. He said, "It came to pass that I looked and beheld many waters, and they divided the Gentiles from the seed of my brethren." So he's seeing his descendants separated from the Gentiles, which would be the European nations, by these many waters. "And it came to pass that the angel said unto me," so there was an angel showing him this vision, "Behold, the wrath of God is upon the seed of thy brethren. And I looked and beheld a man among the Gentiles who was separated from the seed of my brethren by the many waters. And I beheld the Spirit of God that it came down and wrought upon the man. And he went forth upon the many waters, even unto the seed of my brethren who were in the promised land." Now this sounds, especially when you read his own writings about what prompted him, Christopher Columbus, to go search for this route to India or explore this new world, he talks about being moved upon and wrought upon by the Spirit of God. He didn't understand why this was so important, but it was something that became an obsession, and he just could not let it go. "And it came to pass that I beheld the Spirit of God, that it wrought upon other Gentiles, and they went forth out of captivity upon the many waters. And it came to pass that I beheld many multitudes of the Gentiles upon the land of promise, and I beheld the wrath of God, that it was upon the seed of my brethren, and they were scattered before the Gentiles and were smitten. And I beheld the Spirit of the Lord, that it was upon the Gentiles, and they did prosper and obtain the land for their inheritance. And I beheld that their mother Gentiles were gathered together upon the waters and upon the land also to battle against them." So he sees in vision the mother Gentiles of these colonial settlers coming against them in battle, both on the land and on the sea. And that is exactly what happened in the American Revolution. "And I beheld," and this is the part that I really want to highlight and that is going to form the backbone for the next however many weeks we're going to talk about these miracles. I want you to remember this verse and how every story we're going to share is a direct fulfillment of this vision and of this prophecy. "And I beheld that the power of God was with them, and also that the wrath of God was upon all those who were gathered together against them to battle. And I, Nephi, beheld that the Gentiles that had gone out of captivity were delivered by the power of God out of the hands of all other nations." Now, this is an important part to talk about, something that Tim Ballard talks about in the Washington Hypothesis, called the idea of a national covenant. And this is something that you find in the Book of Mormon all over the place. This is also something that you find in the Bible all over the place when it talks about the Jewish people and their land of inheritance. And it goes something like this. This is from 2 Nephi chapter 10, verses 19. It says, "For it is a choice land, saith God unto me, above all other lands. Wherefore, I will have all men that dwell thereon, that they shall worship me, saith God." And then in another verse, this is chapter 1, verse 20 of the same book, "Inasmuch as ye shall keep my commandments, ye shall prosper in the land, but inasmuch as ye will not keep my commandments, ye shall be cut off from my presence." Now, this idea that these Gentiles that had gone forth out of captivity were delivered by the power of God out of the hands of all other nations, this is a concept that George Washington understood very well. This idea that if in these lands of promise, whether these are the Jews in Jerusalem and in Palestine, or if these are the Nephites and their descendants in the American continent, or the Gentiles who later inherited that land, that if they were righteous, they would be blessed, prospered, protected, even by miraculous means. And when they don't, they're left to their own power. And when you're left to your own power, it truly does matter then who is stronger than the other. The British Navy and the British Army by far were the superior fighting force. There was every reason to believe that they should have won. And had the early Americans not had God on their side, Great Britain would have won, undoubtedly. But because they were righteous, because they were in a position where God could intercede on their behalf, miraculous things happened. And against all odds, this great nation was formed to become free and prosperous, more than any other time in human history that we know of. Now, Washington may not have understood all of this using the term covenant, but he knew that righteousness would be visited with heavenly power, and it was. And with this series that I'm going to do over the next few weeks here, I'm going to highlight some of the biggest, most notable miracles of the American Revolution, and also highlight Washington as prominent in keeping the army and the country focused on God and righteousness. If there's anything that Washington deserves credit for, and which he never took upon himself, by the way, but if there is anything that he deserves credit for, it's in keeping himself humble, in keeping his army humble, in helping to keep the country humble, and focused all of them on a reliance on God for deliverance and for help. And because he was instrumental in keeping everyone focused on the right thing and keeping everyone behaving in a way that they would be deserving of heavenly help, God was able to step in. And God really is the one who gets credit for all of the other miracles that happened. Washington was powerless to perform these miracles on his own, and he recognized it and he acknowledged it over and over and over again. And every success and every miracle that we're going to talk about, he later credited providence, divine providence, God, with being the author of that miracle. He never once gloated about how great he was and how he had pulled off that miracle. And in fact, even if he'd wanted to, it would have been painfully obvious to anyone aware of the facts that George Washington was not the one controlling the weather or whatever it was that the miracle, whatever the miracle was that happened. Now, as we go through these miracles, you may wonder, why in the world have I never heard of these? And I hope that doesn't plant a seed of doubt in your mind of the historical accuracy of these accounts. You know, when you think about the Book of Mormon verses I just read and how crucial a role God played in the founding of this nation, when God was kicked out of schools and out of the public square beginning in the 1960s, the American Revolution, for one reason or another, also was either dumbed down or trivialized, or it was just not taught in history classes whatsoever. Now, as I think about why that might have occurred, there's two plausible reasons that I can come up with. The first is that the anti-God crew, the crew that was hellbent on kicking God out of our nation, was also pro-communist or very Marxist in nature. You know, one of the first things in any Marxist revolution you have to do is to kill God so that the government can become your God. So there could have been something political there going on, that if we teach these stories of freedom and bravery and these miracles, it might keep that American spirit and desire for freedom alive, which is a great way to suffocate the ideas of communism and tyranny. The other idea, the other thought that I have, and this one makes even more sense to me, honestly, is that you simply cannot talk about the American Revolution without seeing God everywhere. It is simply impossible. And as you'll see over the coming weeks, there are too many coincidences, too many accidents, too many strange sudden weather changes, too many like once in a lifetime or once in 100 years, sudden weather changes and weather events that came in just in the nick of time to rescue the revolution from the brink of disaster. And when you look at all of these things together, it's really hard for any scientific or secular mind to come to any conclusion other than that there was supernatural providential aid actively working, taking an active role in bringing the American Revolution to its victorious conclusion. But whatever the case, these events are well documented, they are true, and the idea that these events that we're going to talk about were orchestrated and supported by the God of heaven is also true and is supported by Scripture. All right, so to kick this off, I'm going to start with miracle number one, and this is more of an introduction to George Washington. This is not a miracle that took place during the American Revolution, but is an important precursor to it and is the miracle that made it so that this central figure in George Washington, who kept the country focused on God and focused on righteousness so that they could deserve heaven's help and so that God could work his miracles. Now, he wasn't the only one. There was a very religious focus throughout the country and during this whole time, but especially his role in keeping Congress, in keeping the army, and then extending that influence beyond the army to be focusing on righteousness, to be deserving of heavenly help. That credit goes to George Washington, and it's questionable whether anyone else could have done it in quite the same way. So this is a miracle that gave us this great leader and made sure that he was ready for this crucial role that he was going to play. And this story is a story that goes back to the French and Indian War. So between 1754 and 1763, the French teamed up with the Indians to try and repel the British from some of the colonial land. So this time, the colonies were under complete British control, and the idea of an American Revolution was not something that was even being talked about at the time. And Washington fought for the British in this war. Now, he had some leadership roles, but he was passed over for more significant roles because he wasn't of noble blood. He was an American commoner. But he fought and led bravely nonetheless. After this war, so in 1770, about 6 years before the signing of the Declaration of Independence, he was out surveying some land with a team. And into this camp walks a peaceful group of Indians. And the chief, who is called the Grand Sachem, began speaking with him about a battle that he had participated in against the British, in which the British were completely clobbered. I mean, they suffered immense casualties, whereas the French and Indian side suffered relatively few. But George Washington was in that battle, and he was one of the leaders, one of the commanders for the British during that battle. And here's what this Grand Sachem had to say about that battle. He said, "By the waters of the Monongahela, we met the soldiers of the King beyond the seas, who came to drive from the land my French brothers. They came into the forest with much beating of drums and many flags flying in the breeze. Like a blind wolf, they walked into our trap, and the faces of these red-clad warriors turned pale at the sound of our war whoop. It was a day when the white man's blood mixed with the streams of our forests, and 'twas then I first beheld this chief," and he said that pointing to Washington. "I called my young men and said, 'Mark you, tall and daring warrior, he is not of the Redcoat tribe, he is of the Long Knives. He has an Indian's wisdom. His warriors fight as we do, himself alone is exposed to our fire. Quick, let your aim be certain and he dies.' Our muskets were leveled, muskets that, for all but him, knew not how to miss. I, who can bring the leaping squirrel from the top of the highest tree with a single shot, fired at this warrior more times than I have fingers. Our bullets killed his horse, knocked the war bonnet from his head, pierced his clothes, but 'twas in vain. A power mightier far than we shielded him from harm. He cannot be killed in battle." So just imagine, you're Washington and you're sitting here hearing this story. What would you be thinking? Well, him and his companions on, you know, understandably, were amazed by this. I mean, this really was a brutal fight. In Washington, it talked about, the Grand Sachem noted that Washington was instructing the people under his command to fight like the Indians, to hide behind trees and shoot from cover, whereas the rest of the British were, in their arrogancy, refusing to do so. And they stood nice in their in their straight lines. And you can just envision these bright coats standing out in the forest and what easy marks they would have made for the French and the Indians, who were fighting in more of a guerrilla warfare type style. Well, through the course of this battle, the Indians and the French were targeting the mounted officers. They were targeting those who were obviously in charge. And they did, they succeeded in taking out all of the leadership except for Washington. And one eyewitness, one other soldier who was there during the battle, later recorded, "I expected every moment to see him fall. Nothing but the superintending care of Providence could have saved him." And then shortly after this battle, as Washington himself was writing to his brother, sharing what happened, he said, "By the miraculous care of Providence, I have been protected beyond all human probability or expectation, for I had four bullets through my coat and two horses shot under me and yet escaped unhurt, although death was leveling my companions on every side of me." Now, this wasn't the end of the Grand Sachem's tale. He went on to give a sort of a prophecy. He said, "I am old and soon shall be gathering to the great council fire of my fathers in the land of the shades. But ere I go, there is something bids me speak in the voice of prophecy. Listen. The Great Spirit protects that man," pointing to Washington, "and guides his destinies. He will become the chief of many nations, and a people yet unborn will hail him as the founder of a mighty empire. I am come to pay homage to the man who is the particular favorite of heaven and who can never die in battle." Washington responded to this tale by saying, "Our destinies are shaped by a mighty power, and we can but strive to be worthy of what the Great Spirit holds in store for us. If I must needs have such a lot in life as our red brother presages, then I pray that the Great Spirit give unto me those qualities of fortitude, courage, and wisdom possessed by our red brother. I, the friend of the Indian, have spoken." As we'll see in subsequent weeks, his prayer, Washington's prayer there, was abundantly answered. This is just the start of the many instances where George Washington relies on and gives credit to the God of heaven for the miracles that happened and that would happen in the future. This is a pattern he will live by, and we'll see this over and over again. And I hope as you and I learn about this great man and the miracles that he was instrumental in bringing about, that we will emulate his example. Each of us has difficult things that we're called to do, things that will take us out of our comfort zones, things that we may feel completely inadequate to do. But if we follow the example of this great man and rely on the God of heaven to help us, if we live righteously, if we follow the counsel that we receive through regular prayer and through our daily devotions, we will be given wisdom. We will be given help, and we will be given and we will see miracles in our lives. I know that's true. Now, before signing off, there are satanic forces at work trying to make the citizens of our nation forget the miracles of our founding, because if we forget them, if we live unrighteously, we will be undeserving of God's help, and the freedom that we have enjoyed for so long will continue to erode and evaporate, paving the way for the misery of tyranny and wickedness. Please help me bring these stories and these messages to more people. We have to remember these things, and we have to live by them and apply them in our lives if we want to have a prayer of saving this country for our children and our grandchildren and generations to come. Please rate and review this podcast and give it 5 stars. Please, on you, if you're on YouTube, subscribe to the Abide in Liberty channel and give this episode a like. It's simple, but it is something that you can do now to help magnify and spread messages like these of truth, messages like these about God, and messages like these about freedom. I look forward to seeing you next week.
Thank you for listening to Abide in Liberty. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes and share this with friends and family. In the meantime, keep up with the show online at abideinliberty.com. Also, if you'd like to help our K-12 bless and educate more families, contact us by visiting libertyyouthacademy.org. Until next time, be on the alert, stand firm in the faith, and be strong.